Nikola Tesla, Albert Einstein, Teddy Roosevelt. What do you think they'd have to say about what's going on in the world today? This is Robert Manios of Guys Guys TV, and this week my special guest is author John Thomas. We're going to share channel messages from a lot of famous people. And it all starts right here, right now on Guys Guys TV. You can also catch me on KCAA Radio in Southern California, Guys Guys Radio, my worldwide podcast, and we're on UK Health Radio all weekend long. Guys Guys TV, Guys Guys Radio, thanks for your support. Okay, Guys Guys Radio, welcome to the interview portion of the show and to all of our YouTube and Rumble viewers of our show. We've got a great topic today. We're going to talk about Channel Messages of Hope. It's a book with conversations with some of history's most prominent souls on the other side, channeled through to discuss two big topics today, global warming and climate change. And it's a very interesting, eclectic list of people that my guest, John Thomas, spoke with, along with his wife, Carolyn, and a channel named Sam. So we're going to get into that. I want to welcome John to the show. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a classic Silicon Valley tech guy. He received his chemical engineering degree and worked many years in the tech fields, including software and all of that kind of stuff. And he's able to see the environmental impact of these technologies, which is a great point because everything goes somewhere, whether it's pharma, whether it's tech, it goes most likely into the earth. So he was along the ride, if you will, and participated in these channel messages as hope that the channel Sam pulled through along with John's wife, Carolyn, who's under the weather for this interview, but we're going to get her back in a month or so. And we're going to talk about more of this in detail. But for today, I want to welcome John Thomas to the show to talk about channel messages of hope. Welcome, John.
Robert, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, I guess there's so much we can talk about because the book covers about 20 different people from Mahatma Gandhi, Teddy Roosevelt, St. Francis of Assisi, Richard Nixon, Wayne Dyer, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, Nikola Tesla, Jacques Cousteau, and those are probably the most famous, but some other folks, John Muir, Dr. Charles Keeling, and more. Here's a cover of the book for those who can see it, who are viewing the show. How did you come across this project? I mean, obviously, Sam's been channeling for a long time. What was the connection between you and Carolyn and Sam, and why did you decide to write a book of channeled personalities, and why did you pick the topics of global warming and climate change?
Well, the brief history on how this all led up to the book we have today is that Sam and Carolyn have known each other for a long time, well over a decade. Sam is not a professional channeler. She doesn't do this for a living, but she realized early on in her life that she had animal communications abilities. She could sense what horses were thinking when they were scared. This happened as a child. So later in her life, she would informally do some animal communications sessions with people she knew. We were having some trouble with our cats in the household. Carolyn and Sam worked together on that. And, you know, that's how the whole thing sort of developed. Now, later, or let me say in more recent times, within the last couple years, Sam started receiving what she felt were high vibration messages clearly intended for Carolyn. Sam was receiving this. Sam told Carolyn, and so they set up a session. Sam normally doesn't channel souls that were in a body, so to speak, and they made a connection with an entity, and we'll call that entity Baba. This is someone Carolyn had past lives with. Was clearly, what we came to learn was a group called the Council of Ascended Masters. Baba was clearly part of that. And they started having a discussion and realized they were very close over many lifetimes. So Carolyn was like, wow, that's very interesting. We can actually channel a soul on the other side. And so Carolyn had this inspiration. Well, I wonder if we can channel other souls. And it's really interesting for me to get this information, but in the way that Sam channels, Sam doesn't have any recollection of the session, the words that were spoken. She can feel certain energies, but that's about it. So David Bowie was someone very interesting for Sam. So Carolyn said, well, let's see if we can bring in David Bowie. I can interview him through you. And then later I can tell you, you know, what happened in that interview. And they did that and it worked. And actually Carolyn had just a fantastic, these are interactive conversations through Sam. Sam doesn't recall them, but for Carolyn, you know, David Bowie has an incredible sense of humor, a very English wit. And so they established that they could do that. And then Carolyn was in, as it's in her introduction, or she mentioned, she was in the shower and had this inspiration. Wow, if we can channel other souls like David Bowie, maybe we can channel other historically prominent souls around a variety of topics and come up with messages of hope for things that are going on today, divided country, wars in other areas, climate change, a variety of things. She had that inspiration. So then they got Baba back in. And Baba said, you know, to make a long story short, that was not really your inspiration. That was the council. And we have chosen you to be the person that carries these messages of hope. And by the way, what we see on the council side is that a big struggle going on is the struggle that Mother Earth has. Mother Earth has a soul, and she's really struggling. And you know, there's a lot of people here in a body that have great despair about what's going on with our climate. So Baba wanted her to specifically, you know, talk about the environment and global warming. Trying to do one book around all of those topics would have just been too much. Carolyn came to that conclusion too. So that is how channel messages of hope around global warming, the environment came to be.
And how did you select or how did the names come up to be included in this tome?
Well, there are several ways. First of all, Carolyn, who had to do great research, we're not climate scientists here, despite me being a Silicon Valley tech guy. You know, we're not climate scientists. Carolyn had to do great research. So she, in her research, she came up with kind of an initial list. And so we started with, you know, some of those souls on the list, G.W. Bush, John Muir. But what happened is, as we got into this, we would also ask the souls, who else should we be talking to as part of this? And the souls pointed us to other souls. You know, for instance, Stephen Schneider wanted us to talk with Jacques Cousteau. That seems very obvious, but it hadn't occurred to us at the time. Tesla said, I want you to talk to Samuel Clemens. That was a real head scratcher. Samuel Clemens. And we go, oh, that's Mark Twain. Why would Tesla want us to talk to Samuel Clemens? So then Carolyn would go and do her research, and then we would have a session. And then when we talked to Samuel Clemens, we found out why. And, you know, Theodore Roosevelt wanted us to, you know, he pointed us toward John Muir. John Muir pointed us to Theodore Roosevelt. There's a real connection between those two regarding what happened with our national park system, et cetera. So that's how it just kind of evolved and came to be. And
very organic. I think for our audience, I think everybody wants to know, well, all these people on the other side, it seemed like for me reading the book that they maintained their personalities to the point where, you know, I just read the Reagan chapter again this morning, and he was very political in his responses, frankly, in my opinion. How did you find the responses being in terms of kind of really nailing who these people were when they were in human incarnation versus going over and being a little bit different?
Well, here's what we pieced together, both with feedback from the souls and what we could discern from the interviews. When Carolyn was having this conversation through Sam, where the soul would actually come in to Sam, into her body, even take her vocal cords. And on our website, there's actually audio excerpts from some of these interviews. We recorded all of them via Zoom. We realized that we were talking to the soul's higher self. And there are many lives in a body in the progression. Because as the souls explain, when we're in the body, we're here to grow and to learn. And when we would invoke a soul through Sam, it was that particular lifetime that we were very interested in. But the fascinating part is, as we're talking to the soul's higher self, that we also were told that the soul in certain cases was actually in a body right now on Earth in their next lifetime, working on the things that they had, you know, experienced in the previous lifetime. So that was how we, you know, it, something tells me, Robert, that if there was, if we had any insight into this, we don't know who the previous lifetimes were for these souls. But if, you know, for instance, if John Muir, if there was a previous lifetime for him that we somehow knew and we, you know, asked to speak, you know, for that lifetime through the higher self, I think we could do it. I do. So
it's amazing. Well, you know, you have the one soul and then they have many lives and then you have kind of an oversoul and it's a bigger group. And then you have one soul, which is really all of us. So I guess it's all kind of connected and you're tapping into one piece of who that soul really is. But it's interesting that they seem to mirror personality wise. I didn't see a big change for a lot of the folks. Maybe George Bush was a little bit different. Going over to the other side, they seem to maintain their the personalities that we were familiar with. Was that the case for you, John?
Well, as we're communicating with the higher self about that particular in-a-body experience for the soul, yes, they maintained their personality. In fact, when we were talking, you know, conversing through Sam, we would even get the accent. I mean, Sam is a West Coast person, sounds like me accent-wise. But then when we were talking to John Muir, one of the early ones, and all of a sudden Sam is talking in a Scottish accent was just fascinating. So, and we've had people tell us, people that are very close to Wayne Dyer, that, you know what, I read through that and it sounded like Wayne. And it really did. And they, actually, there's some audio excerpts of the Wayne Dyer on the website too. But yeah, we had that experience. And in fact, these souls, they have personality. This was a conversation. It wasn't a relay a message to Sam. Sam would contact and would go that way. It was direct connect, which was a conversation, including some humor would come in there. Their personalities would come in. And the interviews, you know, we would start with a framework of the questions, but the interviews often would go off into other directions too, depending on the topics.
Fascinating. My special guest on Guys Guys Radio, John Thomas. He's part of a group, Carolyn Thomas, John's wife, and Sam Larkin, who put together this book, Channel Messages of Hope, Conversations with History's Most Prominent Souls on the Other Side on about Global Warming and Climate Change. So let's get into the topic of global warming and climate change. What was the consensus that you, because it's a political issue here for folks on Earth in terms of everybody agrees there's climate change, there's a disagreement about how it's occurred. And it was interesting when I was reading Reagan, he took a very Republican perspective on it, like it might not be that much mankind, it's more about natural occurrences. And I don't know the answer, and I don't get, we don't do politics on the show, but what was the consensus you got from the individuals you, the three, spoke with, conversed with in terms of what is climate change all about and global warming?
So, you know, when you look at the souls we talk to, we have a real cross-section from policymakers to conservationists, scientists, all the way over to spiritual leaders. And there's a technical consensus and then there's a spiritual way to deal with it. First of all, I can tell you what I put together, and again, we're not climate scientists, but we did a lot of studying on this, and the souls made this clear, is that the Earth goes through a natural cycle, but that natural cycle is extremely long, 100,000 years. It'll kind of go from ice house type environments over to greenhouse, and it'll go back and forth. So that, you could say, is the weather. What's happened, though, that's a 100,000-year cycle where the Earth has a chance to balance through that cycle and maintain an environment. What's happened is that in the industrial age, we have pushed the balance so far over through increasing the greenhouse gases dramatically in the industrial age has taken the Earth and taken it out of balance. So, for example, you know, the natural balance is that there's a certain level of greenhouse gases in the air. We need those. During the day, heat builds up. At night, it releases, and there's a natural ebb and flow to how this works. But because we've increased the greenhouse gases so dramatically, which has impacted everything on land and in the ocean, for example, the ocean, 90% of the heat built up is absorbed by the oceans in the natural cycle. But with the ocean's temperature coming up, the ocean's ability to absorb that heat decreases. Meanwhile, on land, we're decreasing green space. Green space is what consumes carbon dioxide through photosynthesis. That's why the Amazon rainforest are so, you know, important. So the conclusion is, like, if people say, let's say deniers don't believe it, I would say there is a natural weather pattern on our Earth. It's an extremely long weather pattern that allows the Earth to stay in balance and react. We've pushed it out of balance so fast that the Earth simply can't react in time. That is man-made. That is man's doing. And we're pushing things toward a greenhouse state at such a rapid, I mean, when you consider the last 100 years in the context of 100,000 years and, you know, the earth trying to react and rebalance, this is the issue. And that's why we need to slow down that pushing the out of balance situation to give our Earth, Mother Earth, who is a soul, you know, that we live in concert with, to give Mother Earth a chance to do what she wants to do, which is provide us a nice environment so that we can live the way we're used to.
You know, it's interesting. To me, and I was talking about this with my wife yesterday, about fresh water seems to be, it's all about fresh water. And I'm wondering if any of the folks you spoke to had anything to discuss about this, because, you know, we need clean water. Are we running out of clean water? I know there's been some desalinization. I'm here in Southern California, and we have some plants here. But, you know, dysentery has been the number one killer around the world for years. We need energy to fuel tech, but there's a problem with what happens after that. You've got fracking, coal, fossil fuel, you have pharma, you've got Monsanto stuff, all types of stuff that ultimately gets into the ground or into the water. What did they have to collectively have to say about this? Because to me, you know, that's a big, big problem.
It is a big problem, and you know, it's exacerbated by the fact that, you know, because we are in a much less balanced position, you see it reflected in things like, you know, the East Coast getting a lot of hurricanes underwater, drought on the West Coast and many other parts of the world. And as the water table drops and simultaneously we're putting bad things into the soil, you know, a smaller water supply combined with a higher concentration of things you don't want in the water. That is, you know, it is a real problem. You know, I mean, even I'll just say Nixon, you may want to talk about him later, but even Nixon saw this in 1970, that the clean water issue is going to be an issue for us. And the problem is it's kind of regional, you know, where there's heavy drought, you really have a problem. Where things are underwater, you know, you have less of a problem, but it's not an imbalanced situation spread in the way that we need it.
How about, John, like accessing, as part of that whole thing, accessing energy, because we keep using more and more energy. Did these historical figures have any suggestions as to maybe new, different ways of accessing energy? Obviously, there's some issues with fossil fuels. There's some issues with fracking. And again, a lot of the pharma products and the things they spray in the crop, it all gets into the earth. What can we do to access energy? I mean, Tesla he was on the path, and the things kind of got pulled from him, it seems like. What did they have to say collectively as to what mankind can do about accessing cleaner energy? And it's even problems, you know, to be fair, with solar, there's problems at the end of the use of a solar panel, and wind farms have some issues also. So was there some type of collective wisdom that came through about what we can do as a species in terms of tapping into this increased need for more and more energy?
Well, I will kind of cut right to the chase. Is, you know, solar, yes, you're right. There's recycle issues with panels later, but it's still better than burning fossil fuels in the way that we are. There's no doubt that burning fossil fuels is a track that we need to find ways off of. Not every solution is going to be perfect, but it's going to be better. But the thing that is really going to be the big one for us is nuclear energy is inherently clean, except for the way nuclear is done today, fission, which generates radioactive waste, and then we have that problem. But what's being worked on right now is nuclear fusion, which is a 100% clean version of nuclear. No waste comes out of that. And, you know, Tesla and Albert Einstein are working together on the other side, influencing scientists in this regard. We asked all of the souls about nuclear fusion. Is it feasible? Will we actually see it? The kind of consensus we got is, you know, obviously it's not here now, but it's in development. There's a lot of work being done, and probably in the 20-25 year timeframe, we'll start to see this come to fruition. Everything we're trying to do, and there's 200 countries that are banded together, is to try to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees C by 2050. This is the Paris Agreement. We're trying, you know, there is a global effort to limit, to understand that we need to limit this runaway global warming situation, which is not just weather, it is man-made in this small period of time. We need to slow it down. And so that's, and, you know, wind does have issues with animal life, but wind, geothermal, there's going to be various other solutions. Net-net, we need to get off fossil fuels as much as possible. There's no doubt about that. There's no disagreement among the souls about that point.
Did anyone touch on, you know, the potential of using, like, crystals for energy, or the type of energy that's used by extraterrestrials in terms of how they move their vehicles around, and also, I guess they use some type of time travel or different portals, but they propel their, obviously, they propel their ships differently than we, you know, send our airplanes up there. It's a whole different technology. Did any of the folks touch on the other more advanced technologies that are cleaner than it out there versus a natural laddering towards, you know, nuclear to nuclear fusion, et cetera? It seems like there's other stuff way beyond that. What do you think, John? What did they have to say?
You know, the closest I think they would come to that is these are kind of energy solutions, not earthly. Let me use that kind of terminology. Okay. You know, Tesla, one of his biggest inventions when he was here in a body was the ability to wirelessly transmit energy. And he came up with that. He actually showed feasibility on that. That would be probably the closest thing to what you're describing, Robert. But that technology also has implications for, you know, weaponry or put in the wrong hands. Imagine if you could take out a warship by wirelessly transmitting a huge bolt, you know, of high energy. So all of that invention was buried for the most part when Tesla transitioned. So that would be about the closest to that. But, you know, one of the things we learned in talking to the souls, we got better and better on asking more questions across even broader topics as we went. And this, what you're mentioning there, would also be on the list. This whole concept of UFOs, and is that they're another dimension, and get the perspective. We didn't probably know enough or have enough you know, awareness to roll that into our questioning this time around, but we will on the next one. There will be more books in this. But
following up on that, how much did they know? And was there a collective, like, did Teddy Roosevelt understand what he knew in his lifetime, or does he understand what's going on now and all the different technology that's occurred over the 100 years since he passed, et cetera? Or was it compartmentalized in terms of the information that you got from the versions of the individuals that you communicated with from their higher selves, souls?
Right, higher selves. So what we would get is kind of a perspective from their life in a body, but they also on the other side had a more long-range perspective. So whereas maybe, you know, they might not even know what nuclear fusion was when they were in a body, but you would get commentary like Samuel Clemens, like, I believe in 25 year time frame this will come to be. So there is some, you know, you do get that one perspective. I mean, each of the souls in the different classes had kind of different ways they would attack the problem, but there was a broader long range perspective, but they didn't give us like the crystal ball, on this date, you will see nuclear fusion reactors. It didn't go that far at all.
Okay. All right. My special guest, John Thomas, one of the co-authors of Channeled Messages of Hope, It's all about conversations with some very prominent historical figures from the other side. The focus on this particular book is global warming, climate change. In terms of a consensus on the other side, which I think people would like to know about, what did you take away, John, as to what is it like on the other side? And did all these folks know each other? It seems like there's some type of socialization on the other side. It didn't sound that much different than it is here, except they're in a different form. But I don't know about the stratification of classes and things like that, but what was your sense as to what's going on, or did any of them communicate to you what is life like, if you will, I put that in quotes, on the other side?
Well, they did. And, you know, to your point, what I've walked away with is that our separation from souls is extremely small, almost none. I believe, and we've been told, but even in this moment I'm talking to you, the council is with me in this, helping out. And we talked to souls about the transition and then what it was like on the other side and what they're doing on the other side. And the one main thing is that in that transition on the other side, it's a pure love environment, pure love. And I've actually had what I think are a couple dreams where I experience what that like, and it's just a remarkable feeling. And one thing in talking to these souls, I could detect no ego whatsoever as these souls were talking about their experience in a body. They were very forthright, very matter of fact. They would talk about how they were working with souls on the earth. And, you know, to give you an example, even the interviews that we did through Sam, you know, we asked questions like, well, how did you know that you were supposed to be working with us? And different souls that were not on this group of ascended masters that we came to call the council would say, well, I was telepathically notified. Or John McCain said, I was called into a meeting. Was you called into a meeting? Well, that's really interesting. And then mm-hmm. we were told, who's looking at these interviews? And we got this description that made it sound like, you know, there was maybe up to 100 souls that would watch these interviews. And I think it was John Muir that said, and it's a very hard ticket to get. And so to a degree, it made us go, wow, I mean, we're really being looked at here as these things are happening. It can be slightly intimidating until the soul said, look, there's nothing you can do wrong in this project. There's no mistake you can make. We are also thrilled to be part of this. It's just a pure loving and accepting environment. Now, you know, when we talked about their transitions, we did get views of like, because that's really the question. What does it look like? Does it look like Earth? Like Wayne Dyer told us that when he transitioned, when he kind of came out of that state and he was now aware on the other side, it looked just like Maui to him, because in his mind, Maui was heaven. Or Rachel Carson, who was one that really identified pesticides and, you know, how pesticides were harming us. And, you know, she suffered a lot in her lifetime for that, bringing that awareness, maybe being very vocal. She said she was greeted by a million monarch butterflies, which we took to interpret as that thanks for what she did to, you know, highlight DDT and the pesticide issues. And, you know, wildlife really, you know, probably appreciated that. But overall, it's a very loving environment, but I can't tell, you know, does it look like, you know, do I go home to my house type thing? It's a very highly energetic environment as well. But these souls have interactions. You know, Wayne Dyer also said St. Francis was there to greet him, as well as he saw this whole sea of faces or souls that he did not recognize, but he came to realize were people that were touched in a body by his teachings.
Let's flip that around, though. How about people, you know, some of the folks weren't exactly environmentally friendly in their tenures in positions of power. George W. Bush, certain companies that he worked with, I don't know if they were what you would call environmentally friendly. And also Reagan, who self admits in the book that he wasn't the greatest proponent of clean energy, while he didn't have the greatest record. Did they have any type of regret or circumspection about that, or would they try to rationalize why they made certain decisions, as Reagan seemed to do in his chapter? He was talking about tax cuts. I mean, excuse me. He was talking about tax cuts and I had to prioritize things and this and that. And it sounded very political. I'm like, wow, is that how it is on the other side?
Well, I think maybe he was explaining, because we asked him, it seemed like you had a lot of environmental, awareness, and then you became president, and basically where did that go? I mean, we asked him, and that was his explanation, that I had to go with it. G.W. Bush would say, well, I put a lot of non-fossil fuel stuff into my main compound, but he had some awareness, but maybe not as strong. Steven Schneider was an advisor. We talked to Steven Schneider, to these presidents. I think Reagan was, if I can speak for Steven Schneider, was probably his biggest frustration, maybe. And even over on the other side, Steven Schneider described Reagan as a bit childlike, maybe a little naive in this area, which how do we resolve that in terms of from a soul-to-soul interaction? But that's just what he told us. But, this is not a political book. We don't espouse any political party. We're not Nixon apologists here, even though Nixon was in the book. But each of these had a particular point of view about the environment, which is why we included them. And we want to know how they see the problem now. Generally, on the other side, they see the issue environmentally, some a lot more than others. Maybe Reagan not as much, but people like John McCain who told us, Republicans are not listening to the science. And so, we wanted to get the policymakers' point of view on this.
Who did you find personally from the three of you the most engaging and soul you might want to come back and talk to about some other topics?
Well, and then if you ask Carolyn, her view, John McCain really was a standout. John McCain, he goes through this POW experience, and we asked him about that, and he told us, I'll go into that. It's not what I really like to go back and re-experience, because it was very hard for him. Mm-hmm. Over 5 years, extremely physically challenging. He told us about that. It's in the book. But then he came back from that and devoted his life to public service. And so we asked him, kind of along the lines of maybe topics for the next book, what did you encounter your captors when you went to the other side?
Great question.
Just awful to him. Was there forgiveness there? And he said, yes, there was forgiveness. The only way, and it was made clear to us by the soul, the forgiveness is like the main thing that is core to being able to move forward. That has to happen. Otherwise, that resentment can get held. There's a long review, long depending on the soul and their life experience in a body, but there's a review process when they come to the other side of, what happened when they were in a body? What lessons did they learn? What do they need to possibly go back and work on? Raising that awareness and forgiveness is a big point. Albert Einstein talked to us about forgiveness as well.
That's interesting that I want to get your perspective on this. What can individuals do? Obviously, we recycle. You bring your own bags at the supermarket now. But to me, the real solutions are going to come from much more powerful entities and individuals. I'm a collective of individuals, and we do the right behavior, the right things. That's great. But when you're talking about what we touched on earlier with everything gets into the ground, water, et cetera, whatever it is, even pharmaceuticals, you're going to defecate them. They go out of your system. They go out of the animal system. They go into the groundwater. They go into, everything goes, technology, it all goes into the ground. It all goes into the water. What was their advice as to what policies can be implemented and what the corporations can do to stem the increase in global warming and climate change?
Well, there's kind of the big solutions, what can governments do? And then there are things.
Corporations. One and the same.
Corporations, right. Large entities that are setting policy. But there is a role for the individual on this as well. And the first thing is that to really move this, there has to be a different perspective globally. whether it's corporations, governments, they're all collections of individuals. They're people at the end of the day. And, you know, if you talk to the policymakers, they would say you have to put pressure on these corporations, or rather give them incentives. One overriding message is you don't want to scare everybody. This is a Messages of Hope book. We want to give people reasons to be hopeful and motivated to take the right actions. In the case of corporations, the policymaker said, you know, you got to follow the money. You have to give them the proper incentives to move in the direction we want, and the disincentives to go away, you know, from the practices that they have. That was kind of an overriding theme, a lot of, you know, financial pressure. Mm-hmm. The individuals working with policymakers, they said, this may sound to us like, you know, right. Several of them said, you have to write letters. You have to be vocal with your politicians. You have to make the voice of the people known. That might feel a little bit like, write a letter in this day and age. Is anybody really going to listen? But let me step back to kind of from the broader point of view. And what really, St. Francis really made this clear. Gandhi made this clear, that we are all one. Okay. Man may position himself here and the earth is there to serve me. And yeah, animals and plants. But from Mother Earth, who has a soul, to nature, to the animals, to man, we are all one. We are all on a common plane. And if we started to think that way, that would be a collective shift in the way that mankind views mm-hmm. that this is a completely connected thing. I mean, it really made an impression on me that, you know, while we can make our gratitude list and be thankful for our spouses and significant other, we need to thank Mother Earth for this environment that she gave. This is a gift in this lifetime that we're given. And, you know, what was also made clear to us, you know, Wayne Dyer said this, is that man's kind of the unequal way that we're treating each other is reflecting in the earth's kind of coming back to, because we're in discord, the earth is also in discord, and we're not properly acknowledging, thanking, taking care of this earth. In too many respects, we're taking it for granted. Now, the message of hope, back to corporations and what can we do, is that the younger generations are really getting this. And things transition generationally. And there's many technical efforts going on across. Even I'm in Silicon Valley, okay? And even the startup that I run on highly sustainable technology for the food industry, you know, I see it in the way funding is allocated and what companies get it. And more funders want sustainable entities. So that is a good sign to me. And the younger generation is getting it. There will be a transition. But collectively, if we can start moving the way that we're thinking and perceiving and appreciating our environment, that will be big too. So the net, Robert, is that different group, you know, whether you're a policymaker, whether you're a spiritual leader, they had different takes and different things that we could do. And that's why I really now appreciate kind of the wide horizon of different perspectives that came together for Messages of Hope.
Just out of curiosity, because you had some historical political figures in there, some former presidents, and we're in a special time now because we have such a divided country. Did Trump's name come up?
Well, it did in a sense. And again, this is not a political book. We all have our political views.
Right.
But John McCain, he had some specific commentary on that. Trump didn't get like called out specifically, especially given the nature of the book, Global Warming, Climate Change. Mm-hmm. But Republicans, climate deniers, hard right in their perspective, and hard left has their perspective, independents sure. have theirs. That was outlined, and because we wanted to know, for people that deny climate and they have their perspective, you know, what is the response? You know, I kind of talked about that earlier in the interview.
Okay. Going forward, I read in the back of the book and some other information that you may consider doing another book, and you touched on that. What type of topics and who are the folks that that have been inclined to be maybe coming through to Sam and Carolyn as to folks you guys want to talk to?
Well, I think, you know, Carolyn is putting the next book together, and the topics such as forgiveness or how did historical souls overcome great challenges. You know, I mentioned John McCain right. in the past. We have, you know, other names such as, let me give you an example here.
I mean, you mentioned Bowie before.
Yeah, overcoming great challenges, John McCain, others like the list is coming together. I mean, we've had some recent, you know, activists, dissidents, you know, transition over. They might be included. I'm not being real specific on that because it's coming together, but I think you'll okay. see a general tone and flavor. But okay. forgiveness is a big topic. We want
this council, do they go through Sam and Carolyn to kind of guide you in terms of the process as to this could be another book for you folks?
Well, what will happen is, you know, we go through Sam. Sam is like the intermediate channel who doesn't really know what's going on. So when Carolyn gets this more formed, she will probably have a conversation with Baba, the one that is close to her where they shared many past lives, who is on the council that talked to her about this originally. And now they will have a conversation about the topic, about souls she's thinking about. Baba will have a perspective. He'll tell her the council's wishes because, you know, this book is not Carolyn's book or Sam's book. It is the council's project.
Got it.
And so we are here kind of in a contract way with the council to carry this out. There will be a conversation there.
Okay.
If I might mention briefly, Sam, the channeler, mm-hmm. she never really knew who we were going to talk to. Carolyn would do great research on each soul. And then the day before we were going to have the actual interview, she would tell Sam, this is who we want to talk to. Here's a picture. We would do this over Zoom with Sam.
Fantastic.
Sam often would know nothing about the soul. Like,
have you done any of these things extracurricularly with Sam in terms of, hey, I want to talk to George Harrison or whoever?
Well, it started with David Bowie. We haven't done a lot of that because Sam, you know, Sam can't just do multiple per day. It takes a lot of energy out of her, out of the soul too.
Mm-hmm.
So generally these were 45 to 60 minute sessions.
Fantastic. Well, great job, John. Where can people find out more about Channel Messages of Hope and your work and Carolyn's work and Sam's work and everything that's coming up?
The best way is to go to our website, www.channelmessagesofhope.com, all one word. You can read the introduction. You can hear audio excerpts from some of the soul conversations. You can access the book. We're on Facebook as well. But I think the website will give you a real feel. And I might just mention, Robert, that, you know, who is this book for? It's not just people, you know, concerned with the environment. It's mm-hmm. are spiritually open people, spiritually curious. Are you curious about what the transition is like, what the other side, how they work? These things all came through, and you have concern with our environment, would like to know what you can do and what the souls think about all of that and what they see coming. So,
fantastic. Well, I hope the council will work with me also in my work. So thank you.
The council is available if they are asked, just like, you know, we know now Wayne Dyer is a guide. St. Francis is a guide for me, and I can ask souls where I have a vibrational match to be my guide. They are available. If there's one message that came through is, we're available. We have infinite capacity. As souls, it's not like we can only guide 100 people on Earth. We have infinite
Fantastic.
Capacity. They're here for us.
Fantastic. Great work, John. Keep it up. Best to Carolyn on
Thank
her
you.
Work and recovery, and best to Sam. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Robert, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
If you enjoy the guests and content I bring you each and every week to Guys Guys TV and Guys Guys Radio, please support us by subscribing to our channels and platforms. Thank you.